Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in St. Joseph, Michigan, and just earned a biological sciences degree from the University of Notre Dame with a 4.0 GPA, and she was class valedictorian. She's been to Haiti 4 times and is one of the most knowledgeable people in elephantiasis in the world. She starts medical school at Harvard in the fall with the dream of becoming a doctor and serving the poor. Her name? Brennan Bowman. And I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Brennan Bowman, a special young lady with a golden future. Brennan, welcome. An honor to have us.
Thanks for having me, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Sure. Well, I was born in Chicago, Illinois, but shortly after, when I was about 2 1/2, moved to St. Joseph, Michigan, when my father took a job with Whirlpool Corporation, the appliance maker. Worked there for 19 years, mostly in human resources. And so I grew up as a St. Joseph resident, graduated from St. Joseph Public High School.
What did you learn from your mom, and what did you learn from your dad?
Well, I think I learned a lot from my father just by watching him and the way that he works so hard, puts in 14-hour days, sometimes 16-hour days maybe, and always came home with a positive attitude, even when things were challenging or tough or when he had a lot of deadlines. He did what needed to be done. Regardless of the recognition that he received. So I think from my dad, I learned a lot about the value of hard work. And then my mom taught me more about self-awareness and awareness of myself in relation to others. So there was one time, actually for a brief period, where we were living in Italy when my father was transferred to work for the European division of Whirlpool. And I was in a British-speaking class where they threw in children from other countries that didn't have a special section of the school for their language. So there was a Swedish girl who was placed in my English section, didn't speak a word of English, and she's in second grade. And my mom pushed me as also, you know, one of the new kids to go make friends with Eleanor and go reach out to her. And I'm sure at first I would have resisted something like that and wanted to just make my own friends. But she really pushed me to think about people around me and what they needed and how I could help them. And she's always, you know, egged me to write thank you notes or to go up and say hello to people that I haven't seen in a while, to learn how to communicate with adults, and just sort of good people skills.
Talk to us about growing up in St. Joe's, Michigan, Brennan.
Well, it's a great place to be. Great beach, great community. I got into riding horses at a young age, and that was probably my first passion. Didn't do as many of the ball sports, but just got into spending time out at the barn, which was located in Berrien County, in a neighboring small town. And the highlight of my middle school social life was going out to the barn on a Saturday morning for an early morning lesson and then spending the rest of the day out there cleaning the stalls and cleaning the barn and hanging out with my barn friends. And it certainly it gave me an opportunity to have a niche and to learn about hard work and not get waylaid by some of the things that often distract people in those years. So
you graduate from St. Joe's High School and you decide to go to Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
You know, I think I was always attracted to Notre Dame just because my dad was a big football fan and it was a big presence in my life. We'd go down for football games and hockey games. And then as I moved into high school, I started to consider it as a college, but not really more so than any other school. And I made my round of college visits like most other high school juniors and seniors. And it really wasn't particular to Notre Dame over other schools. I was also attracted to some small liberal arts schools out east. But then as I continued through the application process at Notre Dame, it just sort of felt right. And I wasn't really sure I could describe why. Maybe just something about the students when I visited who were nice and caring. And maybe it was the Catholic nature, the service emphasis of the school. I'm not really sure. I do know that after I arrived and as I progressed through my time there, it really was this special sense of caring and way that people at Notre Dame, I think, are aware of each other and aware of their communities and work.
You obtained or you earned a 4.0 GPA. It doesn't get any better than that. How did you do it?
Well, I wasn't expecting it, and I definitely didn't work for the grades or for the GPA. I remember my mom telling me when I started at Notre Dame saying it was a fresh slate, and everyone there is as smart as you or smarter than you, and so just do your best to enjoy what you're learning and learn a lot and don't worry about the grades. And that's really what I did. I knew I had goals. At first, I wanted to go into a career in research, maybe go more the PhD route instead of medical school. So I obviously wanted to do well in my science classes, but those were tough at first. My first really hard class was organic chemistry. And after high school, which was challenging, but not as much so as Notre Dame. And it was organic was the first time where I could work as hard as I possibly could and not understand the material. So I really struggled at first, and I had to learn how to seek out the resources of talking to my classmates, spending time regularly with professors in office hours, and learning new ways to study. And eventually things just clicked.
We're talking to Brennan Bowman, who just graduated from Notre Dame and is going to start Harvard in the fall to become a doctor and serve the poor. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Brennan Bowman, who's been to Haiti four times. Talk to us, Brennan, about Haiti.
Well, I had the opportunity at Notre Dame to work for a program that does public health work in Haiti, trying to eliminate the disease that causes elephantiasis, the swelling of the legs and limbs. And I was at first just attracted to working with this public health program, but then started reading more about Haiti as a country. And in particular, I read a book written by a Harvard physician, Dr. Paul Farmer, called The Uses of Haiti, in which he describes sort of the history of Haiti, but the history as it's been abused and oppressed by other powers in the world. And what a lot of people don't understand about Haiti is that the reason it's so poor is it achieved independence from France through a slave rebellion and then has been systematically extracted from for its 200-year existence and really never given a fair shake at developing democracy and developing its resources.
Tremendous poverty in Haiti. Mm-hmm. 8.3 million people. The average per capita income is $425 per year. Talk to us about the poverty of Haiti.
Well, I think that all of our listeners, Jack, probably have some, at least however vague, picture of what poverty could look like. No sanitation, unclean water, not enough food, way, way substandard housing, houses falling apart around you. not being able to afford to send your kids to school, not being able to afford healthcare. And that's very true of almost everyone in Haiti. But what a lot of people don't realize is that Haitians know that they're poor. They know that they're being denied health care that exists and treatments that are possible. And then at the same time, though, they have a certain dignity. Everything is dirty and falling apart around them, but they keep themselves very clean and dignified and walk around with their heads held high. And on Sunday mornings, you see all the women dressed in their very best clothes walking to church. And so, you know, it's not a stupid poverty. It's a very aware poverty and aware of the causes of their poverty and what could be done to end their poverty.
What have the people of Haiti taught you, Brendan Bowman?
I think the biggest thing that they've taught me is generosity. And a lot of us think about generosity as coming from the rich or those who have to the people who do not have. You know, when we think about good Samaritans, we often think about people who have the resources to give and then they give to the people in need. But if you'll let me tell a little story, my translator in Haiti, just an average Haitian citizen, spent some time actually living in the States and then was deported because he was an undocumented illegal resident, which carries a certain stigma in Haiti as being a deporté. And so he's not very well accepted in the community. And I spent the whole summer walking around with him and spending time with him. And, you know, I met his family and tried to help with some of their needs by paying him for his work. And then one day he took me to see this woman. He said, "Brennan, I saw this lady this morning who really needed some help." And so he led me into this house off an alleyway, and there was an old woman there with her family, and this woman was lying on the floor and totally emaciated, very sick with something. And Robinson, my translator, didn't know her at all. She was just the stranger, and he saw that she needed help and thought that maybe I could help her. I gave her some money, not a ton, but enough money to get her to the hospital and maybe get her some treatment, and then found out from Robinson later that she died just as her family was preparing her to take her to the hospital. So we were too late. But just that Robinson would be aware enough and see the conditions around him and want to help people who had no formal connection to him when he could have just asked me for help himself, because his needs were as great, but he had that compassion for others.
A couple of months ago, I had a man, Peter Praetorius, as a guest. Phenomenal man. And he and his wife, Brennan, are feeding 500,000 children a day in Africa. Mm-hmm. And he said something, and I quote, "I've learned much more from the poor than I have from the rich." What do you say about that?
I absolutely agree. I think that that's a lesson that my faith has taught me. That's what Jesus did, was he hung around with poor people and sick people and even criminals. And I think if you really get to know the people who are suffering, they can teach you a lot about the causes of their suffering and ways that you could help alleviate their suffering.
Talk to us about the disease elephantiasis.
Mm-hmm. Elephantiasis is caused by a parasitic worm that's transmitted by mosquitoes, and it falls under a category of neglected tropical diseases. So when we think about diseases in poor countries, we think about AIDS and tuberculosis and malaria. But these are diseases often caused by parasites that may not kill people as quickly as AIDS do, but they disfigure them, they disable them, and they end up can cause as much damage to the society just by taking people away from the workforce and away from taking care of their family. And a lot of them are either preventable or treatable. And elephantiasis is one that is not treatable once you have the deformed limbs, but is very easily preventable by an annual treatment with a medicine called diethylcarbamazine. Very safe, simple pill. And the way that you treat is you just give it to the whole population and deliver it to everyone. And then the infected people are treated and then can't transmit the disease to others. So I work with this program that mounts an effort along with other collaborators internationally and local government and international NGOs to deliver this drug to the whole population on an annual basis until we can eliminate the disease.
Now, many, many years ago, we had this disease very prevalent in South Carolina, I believe.
Yes. And it was eliminated from the states actually just by improved sanitation without having to do treatment.
There's a professor, a priest at Notre Dame, Father Thomas Streit, that probably got you involved in this. Talk to us about that priest.
Well, he's an incredibly inspirational person, has been a great mentor to me. And I think especially so because the way that he operates in Haiti is by building capacity among the people and not only trying to build up the material resources so that we can do this program effectively, but by helping build the human resources. So when I've gone down to Haiti, it's basically Father Tom and I and then a almost whole Haitian staff who are of doctors and scientists and business people who really do the brunt of this work and take leadership. And so I think what I've learned from Father Streit is the need to empower people and to give them the resources they need so that they can become leaders.
What has Father Tom taught you about what one person with a mission can do?
You know, I hate to throw that back at you, Jack, but I think he's taught me that one person cannot make an impact unless they engage other people. One person can have a vision. One person can get something started. One person can save something if it falters, maybe. But one person can't do something alone. You have to engage others in your work.
Starts with one.
It does.
And this visionary has to get other people to buy into that vision, and then those people turn the vision into reality.
Yes, and I don't think that will be very hard to do in my generation because from my peers at Notre Dame and elsewhere, I just see an incredible awareness of the problems in the world and of our duty to work to help solve these things. You know, my generation is not thinking in the language of charity. We're thinking about justice and rights and trying to build a movement so that, you know, one cause could start with one person could say, hey, we need to eliminate elephantiasis, but then you need to get other people on board. And that's something that I think my generation is doing very effectively. Previous generations have worked to build movements for civil and political rights, and those struggles are still ongoing. But I think that my generation is going to work to build movements for social and economic human rights, the right to health care, the right to education, the right to clean water, the right to food.
We're talking to Brennan Bowman, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Brennan Bowman. And on May 17th of this past year, she gave the valedictorian speech at the commencement exercises for Notre Dame. There were a series of speeches, one by the president of Notre Dame, Father Jenkins, one by the president of the United States of America, Barack Obama, and yours. In my opinion, Brennan, I thought yours was the best. What was the basic message of your speech that day?
Well, I think I was in strong company giving those speeches. But the basic message of my speech was something that a lot of us learn at home, start to learn at home and then continue to learn at a place like Notre Dame, and something we'll all understand, that when much is given, to us, much is expected of us. And I spoke about three things that Notre Dame has given us, our education, our sense of community, and the opportunity to deepen our consciences, and then the expectations that those lead us to.
One of the things you talked about in the speech was you encouraged your classmates to, quote, risk disappointment. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean that when we're expected to use the knowledge that we have and take it out into the world, that we're not always going to win and we're not always going to do things right. We were just speaking about the work that I've been involved with in Haiti to eliminate a disease, and that's an effort that can lead to strong successes, but along the way there'll be a series of disappointments and failures too. So it's the commitment and perseverance to work through these failures because something really matters.
What sticks out the most to you, Brennan Bowman, about that Sunday, May 17th?
I think easily what sticks out most is the way that people sought to divide that ceremony in the months leading up to it. And then on that day, we saw that the division did not prevail. And instead, this effort of working toward common ground for a common good. So Father John, I've watched his speeches for longer than I've watched the president's. And Father Jenkins just gave an incredible, passionate appeal to all of us to listen and to understand and to engage things with both our perspective of faith and our perspective of reason, and to not listen to the forces of division, but to work for common ground. And then the president spoke equally as passionately, and very particularly to my class, to embrace our passions for faith and service as we go out into the world, and to be, I loved how he used Father Hesburgh's statement on Notre Dame as being both a lighthouse and a crossroads where perspectives can meet and then be a beacon for the world.
Did you get to meet President Barack Obama?
I did briefly. As we were forming ranks to process into the ceremony, he came up, and then I strongly respected that someone who was orchestrating this led Adrian Murphy, the student who gave the invocation, and I back to personally meet this president right away. So they really focused on the students there. So we had a chance to introduce ourselves, get a picture, get an autograph. He asked me about Haiti. He was very engaged and aware of the events of the day. So that was certainly an incredible experience.
Brennan Bowman, talk to us about the courage to dream big.
Well, I think that my generation is one of big dreamers. You know, I have to take this opportunity here to say that I'm not a likely guest on your show. I'm 22. I haven't written a book. I haven't started a business or built a school. But I am representing my generation and what our potential is, and that our generation is not going to, it may be a group of entrepreneurs and creators like previous generations, but we'll also be advocates, and advocates that can see a big cause and see our ability to really make a difference, and to be neither pessimists or optimists, because both pessimists and optimists can make excuses. Optimists may fall into a false sense of security, and pessimists may fall into believing that any action is futile, but instead we can be hopeful and believe that we can make a difference if we work together for common good.
Young people are the future. Within the last month, there's been a couple of big events. One was the elections in Iran, where 60% of Iranians are under 28 years old. Mm-hmm. And in spite of the government trying to close down everything with the Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, the message got out. And then the death of Michael Jackson and how that instantaneously spread throughout the world. Talk to us, if you will, about the whole social media, your generation.
Well, I think the biggest point to be made here is that my generation goes out and does things. I have friends. I have a good friend who just returned a couple days ago from Jerusalem. I have friends who've spent summers in Southeast Asia or years working in Sub-Saharan Africa, and then can communicate those experiences. And because so many of us try to go out, whether abroad or just go out into our own communities, and we develop sort of this common language where we can communicate these things. So you could talk about protests following a disputed election and understand what it means to be struggling for your rights and for your voice to be heard. What's happening in Iran right now is tragic, but those people who are standing up for what they believe, they're the real heroes.
In a couple of weeks, you go to Boston, you start medical school at Harvard. You want to become a doctor in the hopes of becoming a doctor. Mm-hmm. What specialty or what focus do you hope to be as a doctor?
Well, I think I'll spend the first 2 years just trying to work through the material. I know it's going to be hard. And being open to the new experiences that are offered. I haven't been exposed to all of the fields of medicine, so I can't say right now that I know exactly what I'm going to do. I hope that I will enter some area of primary care because I think that that's very much needed, and it's the kind of kind of doctor that I think I would like to be.
You're 22 years old, and you have a very good idea of your role in God's master plan.
Well, I don't know about that. I think God has a very good idea of it, but
God knows what he wants all of us to do, but it takes most of us very long to try to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
How have you done that at such a young age?
Well, I think I've had opportunities before Notre Dame, and especially at Notre Dame, to learn the kinds of things that I like to do. I actually figured out that I wanted to be a doctor by spending the summer working in a women's shelter, a Catholic worker women's shelter in upstate New York. So I wasn't doing anything medical at all, but instead I was just helping the women who came in through our doors with whatever they needed at that moment. And then I realized that I had this passion for science, and I could merge those, the passion for science and then the interest of just helping individuals with individual needs by being a doctor. So I think, you know, passion is a tricky word, because I think that passions can change throughout your life. But I think it's most important to just be open to ways that each experience can help shape you and shape what direction you want to take next.
If there's parents listening tonight with teenagers who are trying to traverse these landmines of becoming young adults, what advice would you give to the parents tonight?
Well, I think I'd say, first of all, that I don't really think I'm anything special. I was not a child prodigy playing the violin at age 2 or, you know, reading books at 3. And that I've certainly had and continue to have my share of normal struggles for my age. But I have parents who have certain expectations of me and who push me to just be the best that I can be. They offer me all the love that they can give me and support that they can give me, but then they expect me to just to take that and do something with it. Whatever it is, I'm expected to dig in and find a way to contribute.
We're talking to Brennan Bowman, who starts at Harvard in medical school this fall. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Brennan Bowman, a most amazing 22-year-old young lady with great self-confidence, Brennan. How does somebody get self-confidence?
Well, I think just by practice. I may appear confident, but I still certainly get nervous a lot. I was nervous a whole lot when I was given the chance to give that speech at my graduation. But I've always been pushed, mostly by my parents, my mom especially, to work through points of lack of confidence. Even if it was something as simple as, you know, ordering a pizza when I was little and wasn't used to getting on the phone and talking with an adult, and my mom would say, "Brennan, you can do it. Just buck up and push through it." And so I think that, as with anything, you get better with practice.
Bill and Melinda Gates, the foundation, gave $5+ million to the Haitian cause. Mm-hmm. And I was reading something recently in Fortune about a lot of famous people. The question was, what's the biggest things your parents taught you? And Bill Gates was talking about his dad. And he said, the biggest thing my dad did was push me time after time into uncomfortable situations. Mm-hmm. And that's how I got the confidence and the curiosity that has carried me very well.
Absolutely. I mean, I think at first it requires your parents pushing you. When I started high school my freshman year, I joined the swim team, and I wasn't a great swimmer, but wanted to be on a team. And the first few weeks were horrible. I wanted to quit. It was really hard. I thought it was too hard for me. And my mother pushed me to stick it out, and to just keep trying, and eventually, if it wasn't meant to work out, it wouldn't work out. And sometimes, you know, you need someone to push you into doing something that you don't want to do when it's uncomfortable. But then if you get into that habit, then you end up seeking the uncomfortable situations. And so then I was the one saying, "Mom, I want to go spend a summer in Cambodia, or I want to spend a summer in Haiti, even though I know it'll be hard, or I want to take biochemistry classes." And understanding that you'll be disappointed and you may have failures, but and you may be uncomfortable, but that's okay.
Brennan Bowman, you have great enthusiasm, and that's a great gift. How does somebody get enthusiasm?
I think just by doing what you like, and really digging into what you like. So I have certain things that I enjoy. I enjoy science. I enjoy medicine. I enjoy trying to help people. And then I have friends who have very different enthusiasms and things that they may love, music or writing. And the cool thing is that when those come together and you know that someone's excited about something when just by talking to them and what they want to share. And some of my best experiences at Notre Dame were when my friends and I would just get together and have big dinners at someone's house and share what we were interested in. And then somehow all these diverse passions came together to a great experience.
Talk to us about mentors.
Sure. I have a number of great mentors. My parents have always pushed me, although they have always been supportive themselves, they pushed me to find other adults to use as role models and mentors. And so I still have teachers from high school who I keep in touch with and consider mentors. I have a number of professors at Notre Dame who I keep in close contact with and would meet up for coffee or lunch. And then I can find mentors in experiences that I'm having outside the classroom, maybe in a service situation. A mentor doesn't have to be someone who has more education or more knowledge than you. It could be someone who you're helping, and you can learn a lot from those people, from people that I would maybe meet at a shelter or in a clinic.
If there's some listener tonight that says, "I know I need some mentors." Mm-hmm. But how do I convince other great people to be open to helping me and to spend time with me?
Well, I think you just don't think about it as seeking help from a mentor, but just talking to an interesting person. So if I'm going to medical school at a new place in the fall, and I'll need to find new mentors, but I will try to communicate myself not as this lowly little student who's looking for formal advice from someone, but just an interested person who might want to talk to a professor or a physician about their work. And then things will go from there. I think that you need to maybe break out of the formal social roles of mentor and mentee and just meet someone as another person.
What role has faith played in your young life?
Well, I think I'm always open to the faith is a journey, and I don't really know where I am on the journey in relation to others, but I think Notre Dame has helped a lot in showing me ways that I can continue a faith journey.
I read recently that what you look like at 20 is God's gift to you. What you look like at 60 is your gift to God.
I've heard that one too.
How are you going to make sure that you give a great gift to God these next 40 years?
Well, I hope he'll help me out and show me along the way. I think just being a kind and compassionate person and trying to live the simple rules that Jesus gave us, you know, love others as you would love yourself, help people with their needs, and I hope that that will be enough.
That will be more than enough. What, Brand Bowman, to you, what is success?
I think success is just finding a way to bring your special gifts out into the world so that they can do something.
Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
I think just to keep your eyes and ears open, to be aware of what's going on in the world, to be aware of the way that you live in the world and what you consume and how you use your resources, and then see ways that you can start to work into the problems in the world and work to help solve them, and do this with hope, because I think that change is coming.
Brandon Bowman, anybody that listens to you and is around you realizes that America has a great future. So keep dreaming big, do your best, and make everybody proud.
Thank you.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.
Believe in yourself. Like